Okay, so then we were on the five great sacrifices. So these five great sacrifices then have to be offered by the householders as these sacrifices to counteract the debts that we owe and the unknown sins that are created. Means, yeah. So, since we have debts just by being born in the material world, then those have to be fulfilled. But if you serve Krishna, then they're automatically fulfilled. You don't have to separately fulfill them. That's the nice thing about it. But if not, if you're not serving through Krishna, then there's an obligation to fulfill these desires. Because we are taking facility, if we don't give it back, then that's considered ungrateful. Ungratefulness is not looked upon kindly in the Vedic society. So then, that's done through this yagyas. Means, so then five different, basically, kinds of yagyas. Ahuta means without offering. Huta means offered into the fire. So ahuti means not offered into the fire, means it's just the texts. Chanting Vedic mantras, like that. Huta, so that would include reading the Vedic text or chanting japa like this. Huta is then what is offered into the fire. Prahuta then is what is scattered on the ground for the living entities. Brahmanyahuta is which offered into the mouths of the Brahmins, like that, offering the mouth of the Brahmins. And prasita, that's which is eaten, means that is what's offered to the forefathers. So then, when the yagya is done, then it's explained here how the whole system works, how the humans and the demigods, when they support each other. An oblation duly thrown into the fire reaches the sun. From the sun comes rain. From rain, food. From there, the living creatures derive their subsistence. So then, in Bhagavad Gita 8.4 per part, Prabhupada says, the Chandogya Upanishad describes the Vedic sacrificial process. On the sacrificial altar, five kinds of offerings are made into five kinds of fires. Five kinds of fire are conceived as the heavenly planets, clouds, the earth, man, and woman. And the five kinds of sacrificial offerings are faith, the enjoyer, the moon, rains, grain, and semen. In the process of sacrifice, the living entity takes specific sacrifices to attain specific heavenly planets, and consequently reaches them. When the merit of sacrifice is exhausted, the living entity descends to earth in the form of rain, then takes on the form of grains. Then grains are eaten by man and transformed into semen, which impregnates a woman. And thus the living entity once again attains the human form to perform sacrifice, and so repeat the same cycle. In this way, the living entity perpetually comes and goes on the material path. The Krishna-conscious person, however, avoids such sacrifices. He takes directly to Krishna consciousness and thereby prepares himself to return to Godhead. So these are the karmakanda sacrifices. So you can see that there's connection there between all these. You have the heavenly planets, the clouds, the earth, man, and woman. So this is how he goes. He's on the heavenly planets, right? Then he enjoys there. Then he falls in the rain from the clouds. He reaches the earth. And then it grows as grain, that is eaten by man, becomes semen, that is injected into the woman's, into the womb of the woman, so that makes then the next living entity. Is that understood? Is that how it works? So therefore, then the five kinds of offering, then faith. With faith, then one performs the sacrifice. By that, then one goes to the moon, one enjoys in the moon. Then after that, he falls in the rain, then he becomes grain, then he becomes semen. Yes?
Sometimes, on one side of it, that we are devoted enough to perform sacrifices, but on the other side also, how much we are devoted, is that much we have to perform sacrifices, or how highly it actually works?
No, if one takes up actually chanting Hare Krishna and following the regular principles of Bhakti Yoga, then these other forms aren't necessary. Then it would just be supplemented through your activities, whatever you're doing, then the results will be given to Krishna. So that's the next stage. You know, once one's on that platform, then all these other things of karmakanda are necessary. but the activities of the culture and the interaction and all that in your economic development, that still remains. But the actual separate sacrifice as your sadhana, that is replaced with chanting Hare Krishna.
And something like that, when something happens, for example, a marriage or a barber, something like that happens, then they give donation to Brahmanas or feed the devotees, this kind of thing, that's really part of.
No, it means it's being done for Krishna. This, see, what's given up is anything that is aimed at getting you to the heavenly planets. You know, it means even the devotee would, you know, generally avoid chanting Hare Krishna to go to the heavenly planets. Though, if he wants to go to the heavenly planets, better he uses that system than performs the karma kanda yajna. Does that make sense? Because by approaching Krishna, then everything that you want is obtainable. Because he's the one that sanctions anyway. So at least you're going to source. Though going to source, then you're asking for the easiest, cheapest thing. You know? It may be great for us, you know, but it's what could be gained. Prabhupada gives the examples. You go to a millionaire and you ask him for, you know, 2 rupees. You know, to you, to the beggar, 2 rupees may be a lot of money. But what you could get from the millionaire is much more. So 2 rupees is not significant. So we're going to Krishna. And so for us, material facility, this, that, may be great. But for Krishna, it's not so special.
When we go to the other side, for example, you have our coordinate spiritual master, especially for so that would be one kind of this 7 or 5 kind of sacrifice, serving spiritual master, serving the Vedas, rishis.
Means those etiquettes come in is that when for the rishis is that the spiritual master is the sum total of all these rishis, is also the sum total of all the demigods that are worshiping Vishnu, then he is the lord of the demigods. Sacrifice, that in this age the sacrifice is the chanting of the holy name, the congregational chanting. So that's done. Then feeding the Brahmins means, you know, feeding devotees. Like this. You know, taking care of all living entities. Then it would be done by your interactions with your dependents. You know, who you would deal with. And all that. You know?
Like so for financial section, actually, for we ask that question that whoever is in the home, they have to go back to that thing. So that would be also kind of, I'd like to know, for you, what would be come to like this thing?
Yeah, because your feeding of all living entities includes feeding dependents. Like that, they have to be like that. It means, as you see, is that the Vedic whole concept, there's all kinds of overlapping things, and all the connections are very esoteric. That's what the Arandikas are for. They show all these very esoteric connections between, like here, you see here. Okay, we just read this, okay. He says five kinds of offerings are made into 5 kinds of fire. Right? 5 kinds of fire conceived as heavenly planets, clouds, earth, man, and woman. Okay. And 5 kinds of sacrificial offerings are faith, the enjoying the moon, rain, grains, and semen. And to us, they'll be 2 completely different lists. Right? But they're not. They're exactly connected. Right? The heavenly planets, you get there by faith. Right? And then you enjoy, right, on the moon, right, because by serving the forefathers and all that, the tarpanis, and you get there, right. Then rain, that's connected with clouds, right. Rain comes from clouds. Enjoy on the moon comes from the heavenly planets, right. Then grains come from the earth, right. And then semen is coming from the man, that's put into the woman, then that starts the whole process, right. So they're all connected there. So that's the elements, is that they're all connected. But then you can take them up higher, or you can take them lower. You know, so at all levels, they all connect. So basically, you're always working with all these principles. And then those principles will always apply, you know, within the material sphere. So you have very elevated sattvic material existence, and you have very tamasic material existence. But the same 5 principles will always be still working. It may take different forms, but the principles will always remain the same. So that's what happens in the whole Vedic culture, is that everything, you have these basic principles, and those are connected to everything. Everything becomes connected to that. Like for us, the main that we take is Sambandha Abhigaya Prayojana. Everything can be connected through that. Right? And that can all be connected through that. So then, from there, then we see everything else in relationship to that. You know, another major thing is the control and enjoyment. But that's your Sambandha and Prayojana. So you have material need, and you have material identity. So that then creates everything. You know, and that material identity means you think of it's eternal. And the material need is you think it'll give you happiness. You know, therefore, you know, it's, the material world is temporary and full of misery. It's to cut those two concepts. But it still all goes back to these points. Does that make sense? Like this. So there's all these different sections of all, I mean, principles that work like that, and they pervade everything. So here is that, then these five, and from there the living creatures derive their subsistence. Means when the rain comes, you get food, right? So then from food, everybody maintains themselves. Then in maintaining themselves, then they're able to create the next generation. And that then starts the cycle again. It means you're worshipping the fire, that goes to the sun, right? So that goes to the heavenly planets. Then the demigods, being pleased, they send rain. From rain you get food. So that's down on the level as we'll see it. We'll see it. We offer the sacrifice, and then comes the rain. Right? So here you see still, it's, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You still have 5 principles here. Does that make sense? So it's thrown into the fire because there's faith. Right? And you're doing it because you want to go to the heavenly planets. Right? Like that. Yeah. Then when it reaches the sun, then the living entity reaches the sun, he enjoys. Then from that, then comes rain. Then you get the rain. Right? Then grains, that's the food. And then semen, the living entities are sustained. That means the whole concept of that group of living entities is sustained because of semen. Or you can look at it that they're sustained means they have food to eat. So that's the whole aspect, is the Vedic elements are very esoteric in this way. So it gives rise to all kinds of interpretation. That's the whole point, because it is so esoteric and everything's connected. So someone could take it from one angle and come up with one whole theory. That's why it's so important, one has to hear from authority. One has to hear from Vyasadeva. Then you know exactly actually what the data is. Otherwise the tendency is we won't know.
It's also something that happens through the whole life, in the same principle. Sometimes they worship Krishna. Just this comes in other aspects of life, everything. Sometimes they just give an instruction, just happens through the whole life, basically. They just always make it in the instruction.
Perfect one instruction. Yeah, because that's all it takes. It just takes one. And if you perfect that, then everything else follows. As all living entities subsist by receiving support from air, even so the members of all orders subsist by receiving support from the householder. And because the householder, because they're the ones that are doing these sacrifices, therefore then all other living entities are maintained. Because the other living entities don't do this. The animals don't do sacrifice. You know, your children aren't doing sacrifice. Your Brahmins, your Vanaprastha Sannyasis aren't doing these karmakandhi sacrifices. So therefore, they're not worshipping in that way the demigods. Vanaprastas might be, but then if they're doing them, they're still technically considered within the household order. But they're just retired. You know? So then also, some of them also do. Does that make sense? But in the devotional culture, then we see everybody is doing sacrifice because everybody's taking part in the sankirtan. So then it even expands it more. So then you don't make such distinction between the orders. Like that. Whatever order one's in, they're not going to go back to God. But that's stated later on. Manu will also state the same thing. You know, any one or any order in combination will get you results. Okay, Prahuta, Balidan. That Brahman who daily honors all beings goes endowed with a resplendent body by a straight road to the highest dwelling place. In other words, to transcendence. Like that. So if he daily honors all beings, so we see that as amanina, is that one is always respecting other living entities. Like that. So that's an essential point. So we see is that then takes care of that respect of all living entities. So one who respects, then the others are taken care of. So the man may give food to all living entities, but if he doesn't actually respect, you know, then it's not good. Like it just mentions, you don't, when you're going out to put food down for the animals, you don't just toss it on the ground. You have to place it carefully on the ground. Like it's not that it's for the animals, so you just toss it. No, you have to go and properly put it on the ground. Like that, because otherwise then there won't be respect. And that's the whole point of Prahuta, is to develop respect for all living entities. If that's not there, then there's no meaning to it. So that the Karmakanda, technically the principles of it are not in opposition of the Pancharatrika or the Bhagavat paths. That the same principle. Detail may be different. So sometimes the detail may be unimportant. So that will be dropped. But the principle always remains. So therefore we may not be doing the Balidan, but the respecting of all living entities, that is maintained. Because if for devotees it's just that humility, that tolerance, that respect, that good. But for them it will be through this ritual of Prahuta. You know what I'm saying? And that's to create this respect for all living entities. Does that make some sense? Okay.
Is it also because householders in St. Paul's and violence by cooking, cultivating agriculture. So that's why they get more involved in it. And this principle is more.
Well, it's because others may be involved also. Technically, you would look at the brahmacharis sannyasis wouldn't be cooking. And generally, vanaprasas, they don't also do any cooking. Mm-hmm. But other things might or might not be done. But the point is that goes to someone else, the student that goes to the teacher. Grihastha stays with himself. The vanaprasthi gives up these things anyway. And the sannyasi is doing it for Brahman. So therefore, it doesn't go to him. But the grihastha then, it does, because they're doing it and they're getting results and benefits from it. You know, they're sweeping the house, it's their house. The brahmachari sweeps the house, it's not his house. The sannyasi sweeps the house, not his house. You know, Vanaprastha may sweep the house and he's giving up the concept that he has a house. But the Grihastha is his house. Right? And then he comes to the level where he sees that it's Krishna's house. But still, he's in charge of it. You know? So therefore, he's getting the benefits from it. Therefore, these reactions come. So then these five great sacrifices are to clear that. They can try maybe another floor, like maybe the basement or something.
Then Brahmanihuta. He shall first feed his guest and according to the rule give alms to an ascetic and to a student. So if guest means, that'll be explained just after this. So if he has any special guests, they'll be fed, and he must give alms to ascetic and to student. These are all part of his Brahmanihuta.
So those are all the elements in there. Because the brahmacharis will come begging, and the sannyasi will beg, and the guests will be there, but they may be there at different times. So in other words, in a day, the leaves are dealt with. Like you see, Prabhupada would invite, he would feed 4 sadhus every day, like that. So that way he would invite them, so he would take care of the 2 of these. And then generally in the city you don't see many brahmacharis coming and begging. So the point is just if they're coming, he should take care of them.
A twice-born householder gains by giving alms the same reward for his meritorious act, which a student obtains for presenting in accordance with the rule a cow to his teacher.
So that means after the brahmachari has graduated, so the benefit that he gets by giving that dakshin to the spiritual master, the grihastha gets by giving alms to those who beg. Does that make sense? So everybody gets something for it. There's nothing in the Vedic culture that you just give and don't get anything back. The point is you just may not get it now. It may come a little bit later. Like that. But there's always a compensation for anything. Anything that's seen as a loss, there's a gain later. Anything that's a gain for it, then there may be a loss later. Yes. That's always the thing, is if they are a bona fide person begging, then it can be given. But then, according to who they are, you will give alms. Like that. So, according to their education, according to their status, according to their sadhana, like this, then you give accordingly. You know? So if it's just a regular beggar, then you just give them something simple, appropriate. But if they're more elevated, then you give more appropriately. Like you might say, if the jaris come, and then they beg, and they're begging for, you know, some facilities for an outfit they're making. So you wouldn't necessarily just give them, you know, a chapati with, you know, 1 or 2, you know, potatoes in it. You know, like that. You give them something more substantial. Like the little, you know, the kid who comes and begs that you give a chapati, you wouldn't give him, you know, $100. You know, it just, you know what I'm saying? So accordingly then it's given. So one should be careful. You know, it also has to be those who behave properly, who have the right attitude. If they have the wrong attitude, they're, you know, they make trouble, they're not respectful, then you're not obliged. Well, it says the best of all charity is giving the Veda, so yes, you know, giving the, whether she appreciated the that you have to see. If somebody who does it you feel don't deserve, then you don't have to. But that's because you know the person yourself, and you know there's some reason for that. If it had been somebody who hadn't been known for stealing, then you probably would have acted differently. Yeah, so therefore, you know, something. In other words, you give something appropriate. So if I'm hearing good instruction there, then it must be appropriate. Because you also have to just see that it doesn't, they don't. You know, it might be kind, but if they take advantage or try to make it too much of a regular thing when they don't deserve, like that, that's another thing. Like somebody was begging before for medicine. But if you arranged that they could get medicine, they didn't want that. They wanted the cash. So then they constantly come with this thing of the same disease constantly, you know, 6 months later, so, and they're still not, you know, so then you know that they're just using it to get money. So then it's like before they may ask for a certain amount, you may give them, then next you give them a little less, and then after that you just start giving very minimal, you know, a couple of rupees. Then they get the idea. You know. So you have to be careful.
Like in Puri, I think it was in Puri or someplace. Probably the beggars would all come up and beg. Probably wouldn't give anything for them.
we all had to sit down and just accept whatever you give. Then he would go and then he'd give something to everybody. So the whole line, they sometimes assume that they're lined up. Well, you're giving a review of 50 pies or 10 pies, whatever was good, the going rate in those days. And you could remember, you see the same as 2 pies, you know, like that. That was quite good. They asked 2 pies, 5 pies, 10 pies was pretty good. You know? Like that, but he'd make them all sit down. So they'd all be up begging when they'd see Prabhupada come with the devotees, they'd all go and sit down. Because that's the culture, is that they used to sit and just accept whatever. They wouldn't come up and bother. Like when I came to India, no beggar touched me. They'd come up, try to get your attention. If they didn't get your attention, they just knew why didn't they go away. Now they harass, bother, they poke you, they grab you. You're not supposed to do that. You know, so you're not obliged to give those beggars money. Because they're not following the etiquette of begging. So therefore, there's no need to. The only one that I can understand from here is who is, you know, is deceitful, but you still deal with them, you know, minimally but properly, as someone who claims to be a Brahmin, dresses and claims to be a Brahmin, and for that they're asking charity. Then you deal with them as they were a Brahmin. They may give them very minimal. You know, because you're respecting the principle of the Brahminical order. Maybe not the individual that's there, but the Brahminical order. So therefore, you get double the benefit. You know, like that. But otherwise, if they're, you know, a bogus beggar, then you don't, you're not obliged to give them either. Because, you know, a beggar is not something glorious. Respecting the begging order is not, you know, respecting the Brahminical order, that is. The Kshatriyas, Vaishyas won't beg. Let him give in accordance with the rule to a Brahmin who knows the true meaning of the Veda. Even a small portion of food is alms or a pot full of water, having garnished the food with seasoning or the pot with flowers and fruit. So this is the idea of the best level of charity, then, is give according to the rule to a Brahmin who knows the true meaning of the Veda, even if it's something small. Like that, but that's a real person who deserves charity. Right? Care of guests. A brahmana who stays unhonored in the house takes away with him all one's spiritual merit. Right? Brahmana comes to your house, they're not respected, they're not taken care of. Then when they leave the house, whatever spiritual merit you have, they take that as the charity. That's what it says here. Says all. Yeah, what I'm saying it's like, because something should be given to them. So if you give them some charity, you keep your spiritual merit. You don't give them the charity, they take your spiritual merit. They're going to get something. It's just like the priest does the sacrifice. You give dakshin, means he does the sacrifice, so the merit of the sacrifice goes to the priest. It doesn't go to the person who did the sacrifice. Because they didn't do the sacrifice, the priest did it. Right? Now, when you give charity to that Brahmin, then the result of the sacrifice is transferred to the person who gives the charity. There'd be some benefit, I mean, he performed, but the main benefit he's getting is the dakshin. That's why it says there shouldn't be no miserly, charity given to Brahmins at a sacrifice. If somebody does samskars, weddings, these kinds of programs like that, they shouldn't be small. They shouldn't think how to give the minimum. Because one, they should only have qualified Brahmins doing it. Two, they know, by knowing that, that's a lot of study and work, and then there's that purity that's there to get the results and all that. So if they give them the minimum, then they're going to actually only get minimal result. It says it's better to not do sacrifices, do something else, than to do a sacrifice and give. Be miserly. If you don't have anything, that's another thing. You're giving your best. But the point is it shouldn't be given miserly. Because then the whole point is he had, means what you're getting, if you're getting some benefit from that, whatever the full benefit, he already had. So him giving it to you, you should give something, you should think, what is the benefit that I'm getting from this program? So accordingly, what you feel that benefit is, you should give something that's worthwhile. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Then it works. Then grass, meaning that means a grass mat. Grass, room for resting, water, and fourthly, a kind word. These things never fail in the houses of good men. My Prabhupada says, even the poorest man can do this. He can give just a mat to sit on, you know, something to sit on, even a piece of cloth, anything, something to sit on, you know, some place in the house so he can lay down or just rest, some water and some kind words. Anybody can afford that. He says, if you can't do that, then you just stand there with folded hands and tears in your eyes and you have absolutely nothing and just, you know, thank forgiveness. But otherwise, it's just saying, everybody's got this much. So minimum, you don't have anything, you just give this, you don't have to give more. You know what I'm saying? If you don't have more, don't worry. You know, if these four are there, then that's a sufficient reception. Yeah, in any case, it doesn't matter. It means either you've displeased him or you've displeased the Lord. Okay. It means if you've displeased him, it's also displeasing to the Lord. But if you haven't displeased him because he's so humble, then that qualified person, then it really annoys the Lord. So in any case, that's why I said they shouldn't be invited if you're not going to take care, or if they happen to come, then you should give some attention. Because it says unhonored, it doesn't mean that you have to lavishly take care. It means just some respect and some acknowledgement is there according to the time, place, and circumstance. Like that. And that's all. So it's a simple thing. Let him not eat any food which he does not offer to his guest. The hospitable reception of guests procures wealth, fame, long life, and heavenly bliss. Means if he's cooking something in his house and he's going to be eating, and he has a guest, then the guest should be given that same food. Not to give some cheapo stuff to the guest and then eats. It's another thing, it's not that, you know, he ate there in the morning and then the guest comes later. Then that's another thing. Like that. You know, it just means if you're preparing a meal for yourself and for the guest, then it should be seen that you don't prepare anything which you are eating that's not offered to them, unless it's something less. Okay, you're cooking for them something very nice, and for them, you know, for yourself, you're eating boiled sabji. Okay, it's not that you have to offer the boiled sabji. But it means if you're offering him boiled sabji and you're eating something nice, then that doesn't work.
How we can understand the position of or attitude of the householder taking care of guests according to his needs and according to his needs. Like for one hand, we have examples of those, like for example, the father of Nityananda Prabhu, who promised to give anything what the Sadhu wanted. So, that's how you want to be unified, or from another case, one can receive guests and give him, but he do not give, he has something for, you know, for spending.
Yeah.
I mean, I can give something, but I cannot give everything right now.
But what do the two have to do with each other?
I mean, my question is how we can understand how one what kind of mentality one has to have to understand how much you can give to a person to knock the door.
According to the circumstance, it means it's depending on the position, what they deserve. At the same time, as the family is not in a position difficulty. Mm-hmm. But the point is that. That's the difference there, is that the sadhu wanted something, he said, give him anything, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So he's already stated that. Mm-hmm. you many times see that they'll say they want something, and they say, if it's within my power and ability, and it's appropriate, it's not against the, you know, the rules of scripture, then I will do my best. Many times you hear Arjuna say that. He wouldn't just say, yeah, anything, whatever. Some people he would, but others he would say according to my ability, and according to, if it's proper, according to the scripture. So if they say something's not according to the scripture, or it's, or you don't have the ability like that, then you can refuse and say, we'll ask for something else. There's two different things. So it's not to the detriment. In other words, charity is not given in detriment to the family, but the family should be praying that charity is good, so they don't feel bad for things given in charity.
After the brahmanas, the kinsmen and the servants have dined, the householder and his wife may afterward eat what remains. So in other words, the guests are the brahmanas. The kinsmen and the servants have dined. Okay, the kinsmen means other relatives and all that. The servants, those who are servants, that would also mean dependents and all that. Then last is the household and his wife. Like that. So maybe, you know, a bit of a shock, but that's the way it is. Because generally we take servants as lower, so therefore everything's last. But in the Vedas is that they're subservient, they're dependent, but it's not, but dependents you always take care of. And who would eat first, the mother or a child? Yeah, so then, what's the difference between the servants and the children? Veda concept, the Shudras are like the like family, but they're children. Even though they may be grown men and women, they're still treated like the children. Because they're not independent. Yeah, but that has a certain degree of intimacy that's there. It's not in the others. The others, you have more formal and the parental to take care of. But the conjugal, there's an equality there, but at the same time there's a subservience. So because now it goes into the level of intimacy. Therefore then, what happens, the householder and his wife will eat afterwards what remains. It means he'll sit, she'll serve him, and then after he's eaten, then she'll eat. But now if they have any intimate friends, they may come and eat at that time also. Right? Relatives means it's formal, it's other things like that. You know? Other guests who aren't Brahmins may eat with the kinsmen or with the servants, depending upon at that time. Like that. But if you have some close friends, intimate friends, then the men would eat with the husband, you know, and the wife and the other ladies would serve, and then the wife and then the other lady friends, they would sit together and eat. Because of intimacy, therefore, then it goes into the last. Right? It means you have Brahmins, that's the most formal, kinsmen are a little bit formal, servants and other dependents are not formal. Right? And then it goes into, to, you know, but it's formal but just ordinary, or informal and just like that. But then the household and his wife, then it goes into intimacy. No, not those, because you're paying them. This means ones who are dependent upon you. So because previously servants, they lived with it, they had their own quarters, they didn't live in the main house, they had their own quarters and that, so they were also fed by the family. So they were given their quota. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to sit down and feed them, but it means that their quota is given to them, and they'll take it to their house and they'll eat, because they have their husband's wife, their children, so they want to go and interact with them. Like that. Or if it's a thing where it is there, then they're served out in the back veranda or something like that. You know, and so for them, you know, you consider what you give them, what you not give them. You know, it's like kinsmen. The Brahmins, you'll go out of your way for anything. If there's anything short or anything they need, you'll go out of your way to get it. The kinsmen also, you'll do the best. But if something's run out or something, this is that. But the servants, then that, just whatever's left, you know, is given them. When they have sufficient, then whatever's left of that, that's what they'll be happy with.
like that. So if there's any shortage, then the grihastha ends up with a shortage. In the present day, what ends up is the servants and the dependents. They end up with the shortage. So it should be the grihastha, because he's the one that's responsible. You know, someone who follows this, that makes this the best order. Not that, oh yeah, we're the best order, so that we eat first, we do this, we do it. No, it doesn't make that. Prabhupada mentions that. I'm not sure if it mentions, because that's part of the prahuta, it's feeding all living entities like that. Because generally there'd be beggars, or you'd have your brahmacharis or other things like that. So then, you know, and if everybody does that, then pretty much everyone would be taken care of. But nowadays, it's like, I remember one devotee did that. I forget where it was. The gypsies lived in their area. So they did that once, and all these gypsies came, and then they gave, and then the next day they came by for something. They didn't give, so they threw rocks to their window, and this and that. So then they understood, it's not, you know, nice as you want to be. Because that's the point, is that anyone who's hungry, they also have to have, there's a culture. If someone's a beggar, or is needy, then there's a culture of humility, but here it's not. So therefore, then you can't reciprocate. You know, like that. And it's just like you can't go out and feed the lions, because then they eat you also. No, it means that you actually go and put food out there. You have leftovers, so that's given to the dogs also. You know, so it's you know, put in a place where the dogs are. You know, that's why it says it's properly put on the ground. So it's checked out there. Or you may go up and just where the dogs are hanging out, go out and put food there. Because otherwise they have to rummage through the plates and they get one grain of rice here and one potato peel there. And, you know, like this. But you actually go out and put, the dogs are there anyway. So then you go out there and put some food on the ground, you know, so that they can all come and properly eat. You know, we don't have to sit there and pat them on the head and ask them if they want any more.
He who prepares food for himself alone eats nothing but sin, for it is ordained that the food which remains after the performance of the sacrifices shall be the meal of virtuous men. So that's
so it's the same Bhagavad Gita like that. So it has to be offered in sacrifice. So here it may be offered a karmakanda sacrifice or even like this, but the point is sacrifice is there. So the highest sacrifice is sacrifice to Vishnu. Right? So if sacrifice to Vishnu is performed, all other sacrifices are contained. So then taking the remnants of that sacrifice, that's the best. That's considered virtuous.
Prasita, the shredder, writes, I will fully declare what and how many Brahmins must be fed on what that occasion, who must be avoided, and on what kinds of foods they must shall dine. A large company destroys these five advantages. 1. Respectful treatment of the invited. 2. The propriety of place. 3. Time. 4. Purity and the selection of virtuous Brahmin guests. He therefore shall not seek to entertain a large company. It's just like when you want to, especially for shredder rites. The whole point is you're feeding all these Brahmins for the benefit of the forefathers. Now, if those Brahmins are fed nicely and are satisfied, then the forefathers get good benefit. If they're not satisfied, then how much benefit they'll get? That's why it says it shouldn't be a large company. Because a large company is very hard to see that you respectfully treated all those who were invited. You know, it's one thing, you know, you feed the kids, or you feed this and that, when they all come, and you know, everybody gets something, that's one thing. But here is that if you have any special guests, or any senior devotees, or that, if they're not taken care of fully and nicely, then there's no benefit to it, really.
Because the idea is, why would one feed everybody? Because there's the idea that there'll be more benefit. So if the idea is benefit, then a few people fed nicely is more beneficial than everybody fed. Does that make some sense? In this. Now, if you can arrange on a big level to see that everybody gets served nicely and all that, then that's great. You know? Someone wants to feed all the devotees and do stuff like that. That's nice. But then they should see that the menu is nice, the quality of food is nice. This, that, you know. In other words, if you're going to feed everybody, then you have to spend the money that would it take to feed everybody. Right? Just like, let's say you have a small group of people. You have 5, 10, you have 20, so whatever it is. And let's say you would spend 50 rupees a plate. Then you decide, well, why like this? We'll feed everybody in Mayapur. But then you don't have the money, so then it drops down to 20 rupees a plate. But that 20 rupees may be equal to or less than what they're eating regularly. You know, if the serving is not proper, you know, all these different things, the quantity is not enough, then the devotees are dissatisfied. So then you didn't actually obtain what you want to obtain, is pleasing the devotees. You know, so that's why one has to be careful. Better, in other words, take care of a company that you have the ability to actually take care of. So therefore it recommends, you know, it can be three people is a normal person. If you can't find three, one is enough. One properly received guest, and that is better than a huge company that you don't take care of nicely. Okay. So that's the principle. Also, it's very, very strict to an Indian. Okay. Offerings must be presented by the givers to a Kshatriya alone. What is given to such a most worthy Brahmin yields great reward. Kshatriya is someone who's educated and cultured. I guess that should be fine. So the Kshatriya means someone who's well studied in the Veda and practices. Like that. So if you're doing these kind of things, Shraddha rites, or things for the benefit of someone else, then the more qualified people, the better. So that's why it says even one is enough. If you can get three, then that's great. But one is enough. Having placed those blameless Brahmins on the seats, you shall honor them with fragrant garlands and perfumes. Perfumes would mean like sandal, of course, but when you get out there, an angel will start spraying it around and stuff. Carrying the vessel filled with food with both hands, the sacrificer himself shall gently place it before the Brahmins. It has to be carried with two hands. You never carry a pot of food with one hand. So, not that, okay, you got one in this hand, one in that hand. No. Then if you want to do this, then have the time ahead of time that you can actually get it ready. You don't have to bring, you know, with one preparation with each hand. If it's in a bucket, okay, that can go in one hand. But the point is that it has to be dealt with at the time of serving, and that with two hands. Like that. Because anything that's not dealt with two hands, I think later on we'll say who gets it. It doesn't go to the person. It'll go to the Rakshasas or the Paisachas or the, like this, it goes to all these different people. Yeah? Like that. Because they're all given benefit, right? It means the ghosts are also part of Krishna's creation. So they also have to be benefited, they're dependents. So then they get all kinds of benefit. Like any food that has hair in it, you know, an impure substance, it's automatically goes to the ghost. Means they get the benefit. Means you're feeding the Brahmins for getting benefit. So whatever benefit would come from that goes to them. It doesn't go to you. Like that. You know, if you just, it's just association with devotees and feeding devotees, then that's another thing. Then that's just if it has, you know, it's impure, it's just left. You know, because you're not doing it for any particular benefit. It's just feeding the devotees and that. But if you're doing it for benefit, that this will be good and make spiritual advancement, you know, then that would go to them. Well, generally, it's not so acceptable. It's not offerable. Because it's food for ghosts. Like that. That's why it's said that because generally you don't have the brahmacharya, that means they kind of seek it, that you don't have a whole lot falling off of, you know, 3 millimeters of hair. So ladies are the ones that generally have the problem with the hair. So that's why hair is always bound like that. You know, the modern kind of, you know, the ponytail, which is just tied in one place, but that's not bound, because hair falls out of that. You know, so the consideration of a ponytail is just for their own. They like it, it's trendy, others are doing it. You know, ponytails are in, so they're doing it. Ponytails were the worst, most disgusting, most socially unacceptable thing. I don't think there'd be one lady in ISKCON with a ponytail. Every lady who has ponytails is doing it only because it's in fashion in the Kama Guru. Because a ponytail isn't bound, it's tied in one place, but a hair can slide out. It has to be either braided or tied up. That then ensures that the hair won't fall out. Because hair is always fat. And it's just the way they are. Because the hair is in there for so long, and then at some point it falls out and the wind grows. It's just normal. That's why you see every time you comb hair, so many hairs come out. So if you don't bind the hair, then all those just fall here and there. So that's why in the Vedic culture, women always bind the hair. Because otherwise the hairs go everywhere. They get in the food, just items, they get in the cooking, they get, you know, something like that. And then when they're taking care of their hair, then they open it and they comb it, they do all the things like that. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. Because hair is highly impure. Like
so the
No, not boga, bogas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's bogas. Voga means something that can be offered. Voga is offerable, unoffered, offerable food. Hair, that's considered unclean. No, then you just take the hair out. Yeah, but you don't eat the hair. Take the hair. It depends on the whole thing. If you don't know this, that, maybe the Krishna is part of it, left the hair. But the point is the person who gets the hair should be very careful about that. Tell you, there's Prashad, okay, well, you take the hair out, and this and that, but if its atmosphere is not right, the people who are serving is not right, you find the hair in the food, you just don't eat it. And you're under no obligation to eat it. They can rant and rave and say all they want. The point is, why there's a hair in the food? That means they weren't careful in cooking. And if they check, they'll find that the ladies of the house or whoever it was didn't take care of their hair. So therefore, that means they're not people that are worth eating food from. Because they don't care about the rules, they care about themselves. So therefore, why eat from such self-centered persons? That means if they want to serve, that means then they take on the attitude of a servant. So therefore you dress as a servant, you act as a servant, you behave as a servant, you do. So here it's not. It's just that they are who they are, and for their own benefit they want to feed people, so then the people that they feed have to accept it. It's like smartas. Smartas, they chant the mantras, they do the mudras, and in their mentality, the God is obliged to come. Because they did it. When they say, okay, puja's over, you leave, they're obliged to leave. So they have they are proud of the power of their mantras and mudras. I am calling God and I am sending him away and I am doing the worship. Because I called him, he must come. Because I worship him, he must give me the result. Now I've finished the worship, now we must go. So this mentality is neither the Lord nor the devotees are very impressed with. So such mentality, one's not obliged. People are trying their best in this and that, and things happen. That's another thing. That's always sincerity, then one can overlook so much. But arrogance, the more they're arrogant, then the more then you start getting out the microscope. You know? And if they're sincere, then so much can be let go by. Like that. That's the way it goes. Because the more they think they're together, then the more, if there is a flaw, then they're fully 100% at fault. If someone's sincerely trying, they make a mistake, but the mood is what's seen, right? Because the people are not necessarily proud. Some are proud of their mood, they're the worst. But they're proud of their abilities, their facilities, you know, what they're doing. Yeah, it's the greatest menu, and we do this, and we cook so great, and, you know, just see how opulent. They cook, there's other people, they cook the feast, you know, at 50 rupees a plate. I'm cooking for 80 rupees a plate. You see, my offer is so much better. You know, but then you start looking at it. Well, you know, there's not enough salt here. This one has too much chili. You didn't cook this enough. You just there's no need for it. Because they're the doers. So if you're the doer, then you did this wrong. And if you're just simply the humble servant and you're trying your best, then it doesn't matter. You know, like there was a Bojadev, right? He and his wife are so ecstatic, they're peeling the bananas, throwing away the banana and feeding Krishna the peel, and he's just eating them in ecstasy. Because their mood is so nice. So, who cares? The point is Krishna eats the devotion, so if the devotion comes through a banana or a banana peel, it doesn't matter to him. The point is someone who's not on that platform of ecstasy, then they can tell the difference between the banana and the banana peel. So therefore, of the two, banana is better than the banana peel. So if they throw away the banana and give the banana peel, Krishna is not going to accept it. You know, they're thinking, yeah, I'm not Bojadev. You know. The Bojadev didn't see the difference. He didn't know. I think afterwards he figured it out. You know, after he sees this big pile of bananas on the ground and there's no banana peels, then it's kind of like, hey, something's wrong here. And then only their love increases more, because then the Krishna is so kind, he ate the banana peel, like that, so like that. Yeah. Well, maybe Jagannath has all kinds of stuff like that. He always has fun. Yeah, the point is sincere, sometimes these things happen. Then that's overlooked. What we were talking before is if there's pride and there's these things like that. On the karmakanda level, because the rules are so important, then if the rule is not followed or the rule is broken, it means that someone's not sincere. Someone's under no obligation. Like that. I think it was Utanka. Then he went and he was going to get the queen's earrings as dakshin for his guru, or actually guru's wife. And when he went, since he was there, and the king was doing his shraddha rites, and he thought such a qualified brahmin is rare to find, so he asked him if he would accept the shraddha offering. So he agreed that when they brought it, it was cold and it had hair in it, so he wouldn't accept it. And the king got very upset, you know, claiming that it wasn't pure. I mean, that it was pure, and say, because you say something you say this, since you claim something that's impure, pure is impure, therefore you won't have any sons. Right? Because it's the son that does the shraddha rite. So the king was trying to do the shraddha rite as the son of his father. So therefore he cursed the Brahmin that he wouldn't have any sons to perform the shraddha rite. And then the Brahmin cursed him, saying, since you can't see that something impure, you claim that something impure is pure due to your inability to see it, then you should be blind. What's the use of your eyes? You can't see there's a hair in it. Right? So then the king, then that time he took it a little seriously. So then he went and checked and found the lady who was cooking hadn't closed her hair. It was open. So, and then he understood and he saw it was cold. And like that. So he begged for forgiveness. And so then the Brahmin dropped his curse. He said, you know, since I said it, you'll go blind, but then in the next moment your eyes will come back. He says, now you remove your curse. And he says, I'm a Kshatriya, I'm still burning with the anger, so I can't. And he says, well, anyway, it doesn't matter, because you said that your curse was for claiming something impure, something pure was impure, but it is impure, so your curse will have no effect on that. So, like this. So on the karmakanda level, it's tough. So we should be very happy that what Prabhupada's given us is no big deal. All this he shall present to his guests, being pure and attentive, and successively invite them to partake of each dish, proclaiming its qualities. Right? So pure and attentive means that one has to be pure, means means to be attentive means the mind has to be focused. So that means you have to be pure in the thought. So physically one should be pure, the clothes should be pure. And the mind should be pure. So body, mind, words. Then you can be attentive. Because if you're attentive, then you take care of the guests. If you don't, then you don't serve properly, and then they want something you don't. Like so many times you see that you're there and the host is so happy talking and this and that, and you know there's nothing on your plate. You know, or you have sabji but no rice or puris, or you have puris and so that but no sabji. But they don't, they're just happy with the conversation, and after, you know, a while they'll ask, you know, anything else, you know? You know, they can't see, so you just say, no, fine, everything's great. Even though you didn't eat, you know, eat that. Or, you know, or the jug is sitting there with water, they haven't filled the glass, you go the whole meal without drinking water, you know, you're dying of thirst, you know. Anything else? You know, okay. So that's the point of being attentive. So if you're not attentive, then you don't see that the guests aren't properly served. So, because if they may say, no, everything's fine, but the point is because they haven't been taken care of properly, then you won't really get the benefit. Okay. Whatever may please the Brahmins, let him give without grudging it. Let him recite stories from the Veda, the institutes of the sacred law, legends, tales, Puranas, and Kilikas. Kilikas are supplementary portions of the Rig Veda. So in other words, discuss the Shastra and things, but, you know, nice, light, pleasant. There can be some kind of histories or, you know, anything that's pleasant and light. No heavy thing, no issues in that for a year of time. Like that. So nice, pleasant, like that kind of thing. And give without grudging means if they like the preparation they're eating, you see it's going to run out and the host isn't going to get any, you don't care. It's really great. They like it so much, they eat everything. Like that. Himself being delighted, let him give delight to the Brahmins. Means because he's not grudging anything, he's happy, so therefore he makes it things happy for the Brahmins. Cause them to partake gradually and slowly of each dish. In other words, he's not trying to rush it. You know, he's got an appointment, okay, you know, and I got to go in an hour. No, then don't bother to invite. You can't do it, gradually, because they'll eat gradually, then they'll eat more, they'll be happy, they'll take as they like. Like that. Plus, you can serve nicely. If they're taking gradually and slowly, then you can also, you know, they're servants. So you get it in that everybody wound up, they'll just eat quicker, and then how you'll take care and serve them nicely. Like that. Okay, gradually and slowly. And repeatedly invite them to eat by offering the food and praising his quality. So you're always inviting, because just because you showed it to them and they didn't take now, because you have to see what's on the plate. When you're serving, you look at what's on the plate. Like, and if a preparation is almost gone, that's the time to show that, bring that preparation. But so many times you see, is this supposed to be burning? Or they're doing a yoga. Maybe they haven't started touching that preparation, you know, but they'll offer it, and then, oh, I offered, he didn't ask, or like that. But then after they start eating it, then it runs out, and it's, oh, we offered. You've got to be constantly, you always just see what is missing on the plate, or what is about to run out on the plate, and then always come with that. That's how you serve. Because otherwise you see, constantly it's always served. So you have some on your plate, and they say, you want? No. And say, sure, I've got. Oh, okay. You know, and just waste the time. You just look at the plate. Your preparation, your serving's not there, you offer it. Or they're eating it, it's almost gone, you offer it. And that way you know that's the trick in serving, is to see what's, know what are the preparations, and see what's on the plate, know what goes with what. So if you have more than one server, also, if you're serving dal, but you see there's no rice on the plate, then you tell someone else to bring the rice. Because you know it goes there. So like that. Having addressed the question, have you dined well, to his guests, let him give water for sipping to them who are satisfied, and dismiss them after they have sipped water with the words, rest either here or at home. Sipping water means achma, so that means to wash the hands, wash the mouth, everything like that. So that will be achma. So it's that, depending upon what it is, they can either rest there, you have facilities, or if they don't want to rest there, they'd rather go, then they can go. Okay, so here's the definition before. Let him daily partake of the vigasha and daily eat amrita, ambrosia. But vigasha is what remains from the meal of Brahmin guests, and the remainder of the sacrifice is called amrita. Right? From a sacrifice, what's left is amrita, that's prasad. What's left from the offering to the Brahmins, that is what we call mahaprasad. No, you have to understand the full meaning of achman. See, we only know achman when it comes to puja, but like Prabhupada says, after bath, you gargle. That's achman. Anything that is purifying the mouth, that's achman. You want to get more technical, then within achman, you'll make a distinction between sipping the water and gargling with the water as gandusham. So some make that distinction. But the general term of achman just means that you've washed the mouth. But to wash the mouth, you have to wash the hands. And part of achman is you have to wash your feet. You do a full achman, your feet have to be washed. So that means hands, mouth, and feet have to be washed. So all that together can be called achman, you know, in its full sense, like that. So it's not just a, you know, if it's something they just took it and threw it in their mouth, then they might just a little bit like that. Thus all the ordinances relating to the five daily great sacrifices have been declared to you. Hear now the law for the manner of living fit for Brahmanas. So next would be the modes of subsistence. That means how they'll maintain themselves. Okay. If there's any questions on this?
You several times you mentioned in the course, you mentioned duties of householders to worship ghosts as a...
Yeah, worship ghosts means to worship living entities. Ghosts happen to be part of them. Mm-hmm. It's not ghost worship. It's that in the performance of the Balidan, mm-hmm. many of the places where you throw the grains, those are the quota for certain ghosts. But you're not doing ghost worship.
Yeah.
Because this is the, I think it's called Vishvadeva, Vishvam. Is a name for it. Balidan is the common name, because Balidan means it's being put in certain places. The Bali is being offered. But it also, Vaishvadeva, I think it's called. It means you're putting it all, one of them is the head of the bed at certain places, and you're just outside the house, inside the house. There's all these different places where all these living entities sit, and they take care of those parts of the house. And so you're obliged to feed them. Like that. So in the morning and evening, they're fed. You know, or if you only cook once a day, then once a day, whatever it is. But but if you're a devotee, then you're pleasing Krishna, so therefore already the demigods are being, and then all their assistants are already pleased, so then you don't need to do that. They get some benefit, but the point is are you the one that's supposed to be benefiting them? They also get benefit from just from hearing the holy name. You know what I'm saying? But technically means that if you're working on a path, they're taking the spiritual benefit of your chanting, so you're chanting for them. But you're supposed to be chanting for yourself. You're supposed to be doing kirtan for them. Like that. So the point is that's there. Now, why would that be there? Now, maybe the beads don't like to be exposed. Right? Beads are tulsi. Maybe she doesn't like to be exposed. You know what I'm saying? It's a common principle. Women don't like to expose themselves. They like to keep themselves covered. So since it is Tulsi is a woman, therefore it's nice that she has her clothes. She's, so therefore we chant in the deep bag. Because point is if you're chanting and no one sees, no, it doesn't bother anybody. If people are looking and this and that and trying to, then it has effect. Like that. So therefore, if you have the facility for bead bags and this and that, then you do that. You don't worry about it. like that. If you're just absorbed in chanting, you don't have to worry about these things. But the point is it all goes together with the etiquette. You know, does that make sense? So they're also just part of the culture, because there's also bigger things happening there. There's other people's happiness involved. That's why the rule is there. You steal somebody's, steal from somebody, it's not pleasing to the Lord. Because the Lord is taking care of everybody. So he's given quota to everybody. You take someone else's quota, that means you've taken the quota that the Lord has arranged that person gets. So now the Lord has to arrange again. So it displeases the Lord. Therefore, stealing is bad. You know, in other words, we separate many times God from the equation. So then it doesn't seem to make sense. But if God's part of the equation, then it makes sense. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else?
Just
something
like that. So that you're the Brahmins that are around, you don't start properly and send it to the and then become the disciple.
I've never heard of anyone becoming a disciple. I've heard that they get benefit from it. And you. It means like they get your good karma and you get the bad. You know, it's just like eating remnants off your plate. You never heard of becoming a disciple. It's something, they'll take it and, you know, it's just like a banana in the fire. You know, if you take that, that's how you get the karma. No. Karma is burnt off by remnant service. Because otherwise, the banana offered in the fire is the same as, you know, putting fruit on a plate and offering to the deity. So afterwards, what remains is prasad. Right? It's not the sin. So it's not the banana takes the karma. The banana is an offering to the Lord, and by serving, then sin is burned. The offering, the purnahuti, has nothing to do with sin. Somehow or another, devotees have put that in there. But that's not what's going on. The offering the banana at the end is not to burn up the karma. The offering at the end is an offering to the deity. Yes, it's the last offering. So therefore the last offering is always big and special. So you offer more ghee, or the fruits, or flowers, and the cloth, and jewels, gold, anything you want. Like that. Anything else?
Could you explain this principle of receiving deity during puja by offering Padmasana, Achaman, Manipata? It's like it's principle, right? So it's also applied for any person, any guest, right?
Any respectable guest, you don't offer Argya or Padyam, especially Madhu Parker, they're just any old person.
Could you explain this in a different categories? Argya, Madhu Parker?
Argya is the water of things that are purifying, and the honey in Madhu Parker, that's also for purification. Mm-hmm. But Madhu Parker is only offered to a very special guest. That's why you see Madhu Parker is only done once. If there's a repetition, then they'll do a Padyamarga Machvaniya. Because Madhu Parker is only done. Like generally, like if somebody comes, like a respectable person, then after 1 year comes back again, then you'd offer Madhu Parker. But if they come less than a year, you wouldn't offer Madhu Parker. So Madhu Parker is only a very rarely offered thing. The Padyam you can offer any time.
Is it some kind of special beverage?
It's just specifically honey. I know it's just ghee. I mean honey. I think it's yogurt and ghee. There's a few different ways you can put it together, but it's not a beverage. You don't drink it. It's not like you make a strawberry milkshake. And that's Madhu Parker. Some do like that, but because Madhu Parker is honored technically by putting the middle finger and the thumb together and dipping it into the Madhu Parker, and then throwing one drop forward, you know, to the east, one to the west, one to the north, one to the south, and then taking one drop and throwing it in your mouth. That's how Madhu Parker is honored. So if you want to do that with a strawberry milkshake, go for it. But You know, it's not Madhupark is not you sit down there and chug back, you know, a glass of Madhupark. It's not, no, it does not happen. Madhupark is there, the purification. Then after that, because you've put your fingers into the honey and in your mouth, therefore then you do again Akshman, Purnam Akshman. So that's why Prabhupada calls it Madhupaka Akshman. It is an Akshman, because you're only putting a drop in your mouth, but at the same time, it's because you've done it, you're also going to do Akshman with water. So if you say Madhupaka Akshman, meaning the Madhupaka itself is actually an Akshman, or the Madhupaka and the Akshman go together, so therefore it's Madhupaka Akshman. Either way, it doesn't. Argya. Argya is water, purified water offered in a conch shell that's sprinkled on the head. Mm-hmm. And Achman is sip. Achman is for purification. And but it's just general purification. It's not so much a matter of respect, it's just for purification. But Argya is for respect. So it's offered to respectable personalities. So you may wash anybody's feet, who's respectable. But someone who's more respectable, you would offer argya. More than that, than Madhupaka. You know, Madhupaka is offered to, like, you know, Krishna, or Lord Brahma, or Narad Muni, or Vyasadeva. That's like that. That's Madhupaka. Okay. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare